Navadvip Mayapuridham ki jai, Jagannath Puridham ki jai, Ganga Mayi Jivana Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsima Hari ki jai, Saveta Mata Devi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So this is our last seminar here, June 30th, 2010, Croatia, and we're looking at Krishna swallowing the second forest, right? Krishna Kshetrabhu just asked me today, what's the difference between the two forest fires? You know, Krishna swallowed two forest fires. Does anyone know what the first forest fire was? After Kaliya, which we did yesterday. So you remember that when Krishna chastised Kaliya, everybody had come to the bank of the Yamuna. It was one of those few pastimes where all of the different groups of devotees in Vrindavan were together. We discussed this yesterday, you remember? Generally, Krishna's with his parents, or with the gopis, or with the cowherd boys. With Kaliya, everybody was there. So for that forest fire also, everybody was there. And that was at night when they were sleeping. So this forest fire is just with the cowherd boys and the animals. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the first forest fire represents fighting among devotees or among religious groups. Whereas the second forest fire represents the threat from the atheists. So we're going to read a little bit from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Shikshamrita here. He says, this forest fire, which Krishna swallowed, represents the obstacles that atheists create against Dharma and the preachers of Dharma. The highest knowledge is prema. This is revealed in two ways in the activities of Krishna. Directly, it is obtained through the daily pastimes, eightfold pastimes. Indirectly, it is obtained through the pastimes of killing the demons, from the killing of Putana to the killing of Kamsa. These pastimes exist symbolically in Vraja and only as impressions in Goloka. Actually, they are not found there in the spiritual world and cannot exist there. Reading the indirect pastimes, the devotee can purify himself. Being purified, he can taste the direct pastimes and perceive Goloka. If the aspirant for prema very carefully cultivates in this way, he will understand all these matters. The devotee who worships the holy name should first petition the Lord for the strength to cast out all these unfavorable tendencies and should pray thus before Lord Hari on a daily basis. By doing this regularly, the devotee's heart will eventually become purified. Or, Krishna has killed a number of demons which may arise in the kingdom of the heart. So in order to destroy these problems, a devotee must cry very humbly before the Lord and admit defeat. Then the Lord will nullify all contaminations. So again, this particular contamination represented by swallowing the second fire is that which we find from the atheists, the materialists, who attack Dharma and the preachers of Dharma. So this is certainly a great problem for us at the present time. If we think about how difficult it is to be a devotee of Krishna at the present time. And it's not just that we're not in India. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, I used to think, well, if I go to India, then it will be very easy to be a devotee. But I found that in the Western country, I was very strange for being a white person wearing a sari, and in India, I was very strange for being a white person wearing a sari. Also, what I see is that even in India, the influence of atheistic culture is becoming stronger and stronger. So that if you go to a city such as Mumbai, you will see advertisements that are so, how shall we say, gross, that you wouldn't even see them in America. You know, the Americans would be hesitant to put up such sexually explicit billboards in the middle of a city. And this is what's happened. That was when I was in Mumbai maybe 3-4 years ago. But basically, everywhere we are in the world, there is propaganda and an atmosphere against religious people and spiritual people. Just like our professor, Radhika Raman, was saying that if you're going to teach chemistry in the university, if you're a practicing chemist, then they'll give you more facility and you're more likely to get the job than if you just know chemistry theoretically. But if you're teaching religion, if you're a practicing religious person, you're less likely to get a job. Right? So they want the people who teach chemistry to be chemists, but they don't want the people who teach religion to be religious. So there's this bias that religious people are not really logical, that religious people are emotional, that religious people are self-righteous. And this attitude towards religious people is not only in the university, it pervades everything. Now, even like my family, especially my mother, when I wanted to join the ashram, she said, I have no problem with you being religious, but not that everything in your life becomes religion. And we find this even among the Hindu families whose children join ISKCON. They'll say, you know, you can worship Krishna, but not all the time. Don't dedicate your whole life. So there's this pushing from the family, from the friends, from the universities, at work. If you work at a job, they're going to expect you to come to the restaurants and eat with them and drink with them in order to maintain your job. They're going to expect you to know about the latest movies. They're going to expect you to know about the latest sports scores. If you say, oh, I don't know who won the, you know, World Cup, they'll think that you're crazy. There's something wrong with you if you don't know the names of the latest movie stars. And this is a big problem for our children, especially. Those of us who grew up in Western culture, we know how to function in that culture. But for our children, it can be very difficult. If they go to work in the world, people think that they're from, you know, Mars. That they don't know anything about the culture. One of my children was telling me how when he first had a job, that many things people were talking about, like Peter Pan or Goldilocks, or he didn't know what they're talking about. He said, Mats, I went and rented all the movies so that I could deal with people. He said, I rented all these children's movies when I was 25 so I could understand the culture. So this is the big problem. And it's one of the main obstacles in our trying to become devotees of Krishna, that we're trying to become a devotee of Krishna in a very atheistic society. We're constantly being attacked that there's something wrong with us, that we're not materialistic people. So meditating on this particular pastime of Krishna will help us to conquer over this obstacle and be spiritual people in a really bad environment. Okay. Now we're going to look at some other, before we enter the pastime itself, we're going to meditate on some other instructions from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this has really been at the heart of my whole meditation on and presenting these pastimes. And that is not to see, well, here's my life and here's Krishna's Leela. But to really enter into Krishna's Leela even now. And we can see ourselves as being part of Krishna's pastimes in the sense that we're part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And Prabhupada says ISKCON is one of the branches of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tree. Therefore, what is happening to us as individuals is part of Chaitanya's Leela. You might ask, well, what good will that do me to meditate on my activities as part of Krishna's story? And here the Thakur explains how we're part of Krishna's story from a different perspective. So I'd like to read what he says here. The Leelas of Sri Krishna are unlimited and variegated. This is from Jiva Dharma. Hence, this material world also is another of his many unique activities. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that what's happening in this material world is also one of Krishna's pastimes. When the supreme autocrat willfully engages in a kaleidoscope of pastimes. Do you all know what a kaleidoscope is? Those things you turn and you see the different colors. Why should it be unusual for him to enact this particular pastime? This pastime meaning of creating and maintaining the material world. If the principle of variegated leelas is kept intact, not a single type of leela can be rejected. So the Thakur is saying that we also accept that this world is the Lord's leela. He says, whatever the leela, the participants assisting the Lord may have to accept many hardships and pain. So yesterday we saw that the cowherd boys and the cows drank the poisoned water of the Yamuna. And although they have spiritual bodies, they apparently died. Was that yesterday or the day before? When did we do Kali? Day before, 2 days ago. And yesterday, we saw that the cowherd boys were kidnapped. Right? Not too much hardship in yesterday's Leela. But certainly in Kali's Leela, there are many difficulties. And if we examine Krishna's pastimes, like the lifting of Govardhan Hill, so before Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, Indra sends so much rain to Vrindavan.
Am I going slowly enough for you? It's okay? You sure?
Indra sent so much rain to Vrindavan, but there was a flood. And we think about how Chaitan Muni paralyzed Indra's arm so that he couldn't kill the Asvini Kumaras. So Krishna could have done the same thing. He just could have paralyzed Indra or in some way nullified his ability to make it flood. Instead, Krishna allows Indra to flood Vrindavan. And the flood is described as very horrific. The rain is falling so hard, it felt like arrows. And there, you couldn't see any high or low ground anymore. And everyone was shivering with cold. So, you know, we may read these leelas and not really think about it, but if we think about what does it mean to be in the leela and be experiencing this, or one of the Dwarka leelas I sometimes tell, it's about Shalva, and Shalva is throwing tree trunks and rocks on Dwarka and basically destroying the city. So we find that there's many, in many of Krishna's pastimes, the devotees taking part in those pastimes undergo things that, from our perspective, our hardships and pain. And we'll find that in this story as well, that the cows and the cowherd boys are, that will be my third cup of water, but you might want to give another to the translator because she only has one and it is very hot. I'm almost finished with my first cup. So I have now finished my first cup. It is very hot. And okay, let's go on with Bhaktivinoda. Sri Krishna is the Purusha, the supreme enjoyer, an absolute master. All the Upakarana, participants, and paraphernalia are fully under the control of the Purusha, and they are the working tools of the supreme creator. In fully surrendering oneself to the sweet will of the supreme Lord, it is only natural that one may have to accept adversities also. If finally this material adversity turns into an auspicious state that is far from miserable, then why ultimately should one call it adversity? So here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that in being part of Krishna's pastimes in this world, there may also be some hardships. But if we are able to perceive those as being something auspicious that is not miserable, but is unlimitedly blissful, then how can you call it adversity? Here he says, on the transcendental platform, the tribulations of the jiva, while trying to satisfy the Lord in his pastimes, are by all accounts pleasurable. Yet the conditioned soul, by misuse of his free will, denies himself the exaltation one experiences whilst directly assisting Sri Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. So, again, to follow what the Thakur is saying, he's saying this material world is also Krishna's pastimes. If we choose to see ourselves as assisting the Lord in his pastimes, and we choose the exaltation of that participation, then we will no longer experience misery, although externally we may go through many difficulties in order to please the Lord. The Thakur says, instead he embraces Maya, who gives him only acute harassment. If anyone is to... You can't hear me? Okay, so we have to have this working.
It was funny, when you were talking, it became louder.
It became louder. It was going louder. And so part of that is that if I move even 1 millimeter from the microphone, it changes. It's not a very multi-directional, it's a unidirectional microphone, and you have to have it like practically in your mouth for it to work. Okay. So it says he embraces Maya, who gives him only acute harassment. If anyone is to blame for this dilemma, it is the jiva and definitely not Krishna. So the point here is that during the difficulties of our lives, if we experience those as misery, that is our responsibility, because I'm seeing my life as separate from Krishna. And then I can choose to see how my life is part of Krishna's pastimes, even in this world. Alright. We will now go on to our story. This story takes place the same day as the pastimes in Taliban. Everyone remember the pastimes in Taliban? What happens in Taliban? The donkey demon, Dinakasura. Right? And also on that day was the killing of Pralambasura. So here's a little drawing of the killing of Pralambasura. You can see there's Balaram riding on Pralambasura, who here looks like a cowherd boy. And Krishna's carrying Sridham. You know, Sridham is also Garuda, who usually carries Krishna. So here Krishna's carrying him. And this Pralamba took Balaram very far away. He took him to a banyan tree in Bandiravan. By the way, this pastime also takes place at the end of summer. Who here has been to Bandiravan? Anybody here been to Bandiravan? Okay, it's a little bit off of the main tour area. You have to cross the Jumuna. It's a big banyan tree. And here we see everyone's in Bandiravan. Pralambasura took Balaram to Bandiravan, and then Krishna and all the cowherd boys followed. The color is a little off on this projector. It's not really that green. These pictures, by the way, those of you who saw our children's books, these drawings are for one of our children's books. Okay, so all the boys were there playing. And they're very happily playing with Krishna. And as so often happens when devotees are absorbed in Krishna, they forget about everything else. So that's what happened. And if you can see, then while the boys are all playing with Krishna, what's happening over here? Yeah, it wasn't just cows. Does anyone know what other animals were there? Goats and buffalo. So Krishna was herding also goats and buffalo.
And they started to wander away. Now, they were wandering away looking for what? Fresh grass. Now, this is very odd, but we should also mention that Mandirvan is right by the Yamuna. So it's very odd that they would go wandering away looking for fresh grass, because in Vrindavan, as soon as the cows or goats or buffalo eat the grass, it grows up again. There's plenty of fresh grass in Vrindavan. Unfortunately, though, they were so much hankering after fresh grass that they even crossed over the Yamuna. They wandered very far away. They went about 5 kroshas, which is about 15 kilometers. That's a really long way. And there's 3 names for the forest they went to, and I don't know what any of them signify. I haven't been able to find this out. Ishikatava, Mandiryari, or Munjanya. Those are 3 names for the forest that they went to. Now, this behavior of the cows, goats, and buffalo is very significant. We sometimes ask, how is it that the jiva can fall from the spiritual world? And here the cows, goats, and buffalo, though they're with Krishna and with Krishna's friends, they somehow thought, there's nicer grass over here. And they started wandering away. They go and they get some nice grass. Oh, now there's nicer grass over here. 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 And pretty soon they were 15 kilometers away. So this can happen with us also. You know, we're in Krishna consciousness, and then we think, oh, maybe there's some more enjoyment over here. Oh, that's not so good. No, maybe there's some more enjoyment over here. Oh, maybe there's some more enjoyment over here. And pretty soon, we're very, very far away from our Krishna consciousness, and all of a sudden we say, how did I get here? This is also my understanding of our original fall down. Prabhupada says our first fall down is not really much of a fall down. We take birth as Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is still a devotee. You know, he's still serving Krishna, but he gets to, we were talking about this yesterday, right? But Lord Brahma gets to be God of a universe. So the entity in the spiritual world is thinking, okay, I want to serve Krishna, but I also want to be God. So you get to do that. Eko bhavanam yo vidadati tamo. Krishna fulfills all desires. Okay, be Lord Brahma. And then from there, you gradually, Lord Brahma can become attached to the creation and gradually take various births. It's not that we leave Goloka Vrindavan and become a human being in Kali Yuga. And very gradually. So they went very, very far away. Now, meanwhile, all of the boys are still playing. As the cows wander away, looking for fresh grass, there's a field of sugar cane. And to get to the grass that they want to get to, they start going through this sugar cane field. And as they go through the sugar cane field, they get stuck. Not like if you have very, like a gate where the bars are very close together. I'm really sorry about this microphone.
Put it someplace.
Maybe that'll help. Maybe I should just hold it. I do that. Okay, I think then I can control the sound better going now. Alright. So they get inside of these sharp sugar canes, and then they can't move at all, and the leaves on the sugar cane are very sharp, and so if they move at all, the leaves are cutting into their bodies. And as they're stuck in the sharp canes, a fire starts burning near them. And as the fire is near them, they're feeling very thirsty. So meanwhile, as we said, the boys are back at the bandit tree. Oh, here's the cows and the sugar cane. And they're crying. But of course, nobody can hear them because they're 15 kilometers away, stuck in the sugar cane. And now the boys all of a sudden realize that the cows, goats, and buffalo are gone. So some of them you see are crying. The only ones who aren't crying are Krishna and Balaram. And Sri Ramaraj says that Krishna and Balaram weren't crying. And Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna and Balaram arranged for this because they wanted to experience a new pastime. Actually, Sanatana and Jiva both say that. And the boys were crying out of love for the cows. Also, they were very upset because taking care of the animals was their duty to Krishna. And they felt like they were so absorbed in playing with Krishna that they had forgotten their service to Krishna. Sometimes that can happen to us also. We just get absorbed in the kirtan and we just want to stay in the kirtan all day and we forget that we have service to do. And something becomes neglected. And one of the... One time when Ridhananda Maharaj was following Srila Prabhupada around everywhere, and Prabhupada said, the disciple is not meant to enjoy the guru, he's meant to serve the guru. And then he immediately went out to preach. I think you mentioned the other day, Lord Ramachandra sent out his brothers from Ayodhya to conquer the world. And Prabhupada, commenting on this, says that he didn't want his brothers just enjoying the capital. So here the boys were, of course their service is also to play with Krishna. It's also part of their service, but they were lamenting that they hadn't done their service properly. So they start to search for the animals. Now, you know how many times there is in our own life, in our own service, when we really want some direction. We're wondering, what should I do? Where should I go? How do I solve this problem? And often we will pray to Krishna and say, Krishna, please, tell me what to do, expecting Krishna to kind of send an email or text message on our phone. Do this. But you don't find that that's what happens in this pastime. Boy, it looks really green up there. It really isn't that green. Anyway, it's not what happens in this pastime. I'm sure Krishna could have told them, oh, by the way, the animals are over this way, and they're in the, what was it, the Isikatava forest. And they were stuck in the sugar canes, and there's a fire coming, and let's just go this way. But he doesn't do that. And the boys are looking all around. You see, they're looking in all directions. And then some of the boys spot, see this one boy, he's noticing here that there's the hoof prints of the animals. And then some other boys notice where the grass has been eaten. Now, again, this is very usual in Vrindavan because generally, as soon as the animals eat the grass, it grows up again immediately. But somehow, for this lila, the grass stayed eaten. Then there was also a path of where the animals had stepped on the grass and it stayed down. So they saw the hoof prints on the road, they saw the prints where the grass was pressed down, and they saw the trail of eaten grass, so they all became detectives. It took them a long time to follow this trail. So we find that also Krishna many times with his devotees, including us, does not give direct, clear instructions. And I think of another pastime, one of my favorite, where the messenger of the kings had come to Dwarka and said, Jarasandha has imprisoned 20,000 kings and they're begging for you to save them. So Krishna said, all right. And then Narada came and said that Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to do the Rajasuya Yajna. And the members of the assembly weren't very happy because they said, we just said that we'd save the kings and now we're talking about doing something else. So then Uddhava suggested that if they go to the Rajasuya Yajna, part of the Rajasuya Yajna will involve conquering all of the kings, or fighting with all of them, but going to all of the local kings and getting money for the yajna. And they said, Uddhava said, certainly one of the kings that will need to be asked is Jarasandha. Jarasandha will refuse. Then we'll have to fight with him, and he'll be killed. And then we can save the kings. So we'll do two things at once. So Krishna said, very good idea. Everyone else said, very good idea. Then they went to Indraprastha, which took a long time, by the way, because Krishna took his 16,108 wives, the 10 children from each wife, teachers and cooks and laundry people for each family. And all the other family members went, brothers and sisters. Krishna has about 99 brothers and sisters. Did you know that? Vasudeva has about 100 children. So all of his brothers and sisters and their families, they all went, and plus so many other members of the Yadu dynasty. So they all went to Indraprastha, and then in Indraprastha, they were spending so much time discussing this and that. And then for 1 year, four of the Pandava brothers went around the world getting tribute for the kings. And then they came back and said, Jarasandha refuses to give tribute, which wasn't a surprise to anyone. So it was at least, let's say, 18 months after the messenger came that Krishna and Bhima and Arjuna went to Jarasandha. Well, Krishna told the messenger, go to the kings and tell them, I'm coming. It often happens like that for us, isn't it? Krishna's coming, but not immediately. Right? Krishna Kshetra was saying, well, Krishna didn't play around with Kamsa. He killed him right away. I said, no, it took 19 years at least. Between the voice from the sky and Krishna killing Kamsa, it was at least 19 years. All that time, Kamsa is harassing the devotees. So these kings are there another, at least a year and a half. Then Krishna comes with Bhima and Arjuna, and the plan that Uddhava had was that they would dress as brahmanas and they would ask Jarasandhar for a one-on-one fight, because they'd already defeated Jarasandhar's army 17 times and still he wouldn't accept defeat. So they did this plan, and as they expected, Jarasandhar said, I will only fight with Bhima. He said, Arjuna is too young and Krishna's a coward. You know why he said Krishna's a coward, right? Because he left the battle to answer Rukmini's letter. So Jarasandha said, I'll fight with Bhima. So now you've got to remember, this is Krishna's plan, or Krishna has approved of Uddhava's plan, and Krishna's right there. And Bhima's the strongest person on the planet. Is he able to defeat Jarasandha? No. How long does he fight for? Anybody know? 1 lunar month. 28 days. And he's the strongest person. You're the strongest person on the planet, and God is standing right next to you. And he couldn't accomplish anything. They would fight all day, and then they were friends all evening. And it was just going on like that. So finally, on the 28th day, Bhima said, Nashaktoham Jarasandham Nirjaitam Yudhi Madhava. Nashaktoham. I don't have the Shakti. Nashaktoham Jarasandham Nirjaitam Yudhi. Yudhi is? What does Yudhi mean? To fight. Nirjaitam, like Jaya means victory. Nirjaitam. I can't have any victory in this fight with Jarasandha, O Madhava. Nashaktoham Aham. Myself, na shaktoham jarasandham nirjaitam yudhi. I don't have the strength to have victory in fight with Jarasandha or Madhava. So what did Krishna do? He said, okay, well, Jarasandha was born for a witch. And did he say that? No. He didn't tell him the whole story. What did he do? He just took a blade of grass. Abhyayam Swayam Tejasa. He invested Bhima with his own potency, and then he took a blade of grass and split it in half. So he just gave a little hint. We find this also with when Bhima killed Duryodhana, that they're in battle and Krishna just hits his thigh. Yeah? Or says to Bhima, in some versions of Mahabharata, says to Bhima, remember your vow, Bhima, because Bhima had vowed to break the thighs of Duryodhana, because Duryodhana had asked Bhima's wife to sit on his lap. So again, Krishna didn't say to Bhima, why don't you just hit him on the thigh, Bhima, and that'll solve the whole problem. Now we might ask, why does Krishna do this? Like in this lila, where Krishna's apparently, you see here Krishna and Balaram, they're apparently looking also. Why don't they just tell the cowherd? So some idea, why don't they just come right out and tell us? Why do they like to do it this way? Okay, so maybe Krishna and Balaram are also playing in Yoga Maya? Any other reasons? What would it be? Wouldn't it be very exciting? Right? Just like sometimes if you read a book and you already know how it ends, it's not so exciting. You know Krishna's going to win, but you don't know how. Much more exciting. Also, it's really fun. You know, it's really fun just to give some little hint and have people get it rather than speaking outright. We very much enjoy this when we have some relationship and people can understand things without our saying it explicitly. So while the boys are looking, they're walking further and further away from the Yamuna. And remember, what season is this? No, end of summer. It's the very end of summer, right before the monsoon. So it's very, very hot. And as they're walking away from the Yamuna, they're feeling very tired and very thirsty. Which is interesting, because the great devotees are not affected by the six material whips, which include fatigue and thirst. But we find that many, many times in Krishna's pastimes, the devotees are apparently affected by these things in the world. All right, now, Krishna is calling the names, and we can see that a little bit in the previous one also. Here you see Krishna's calling the names of the cows, okay? And the goats and the buffalo, he calls each one of them by name. And Sanatana Goswami says that this is a form of sankirtan, calling the names of the cows and the goats and the buffalo. And you know how Krishna keeps track of his cows? Do you know? Yeah, he has his own japa beads. So our japa beads are made from tulsi wood. What's Krishna's japa beads made from? Jewels, different colored jewels. And each color stands for a different group of animals. So he calls at least the names of the group leaders, and he's calling every single one of the animals by name. So Krishna knows all of our names. And even people that we see often may not remember our names. Do you have that experience? You come to a program like this and you see somebody, you haven't seen them for 2 years and you don't know their name. What's their name? So Krishna, he knows everyone's name. So he's calling each of the animals by name. And when they hear Krishna calling, they get so excited. And you see now all the animals, they're all calling back to Krishna. And when the animals call back to Krishna, that's how they're found. You see one of the cowherd boys finding them now? See, from them calling? That's how they were found. And the boys were so happy to find the animals. And all the boys came and they very gently and carefully moved aside the sharp canes to get the animals out. And now you see they're all so happy. The boys are happy that they found the animals. And see, you see the sugar cane there in the background. The animals are happy that they found their boys. Everybody is happy. Now you remember that when the animals were stuck in the sugar cane, there was a fire at a distance. Do you remember that? There was a fire a little bit distant, and it was making the animals very hot and thirsty. Well, now as they start to walk back to Bandiravan, there's that fire that was on the other side of the sugar cane. And pretty soon, it surrounds them in all eight directions. So eight directions are north, south, east, west, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest. In all eight directions. And it said that the wind was carrying the fire like a chariot driver carries the chariot. So the wind was whipping up the fire into a frenzy, and the flames were coming like meteors in the sky. Sanatana Goswami said this fire was a friend of Pralambasuras. and that he wanted to get back at Krishna and Balaram for killing Prahlambasura. Other acharyas say that this fire was attracted to Krishna's pastimes and wanted to associate with Krishna. Now the boy started praying. Just this is the natural circumstance of any living entity when they're in danger. They immediately turn to God. And the Bhagavatam said the boys prayed like someone who is afraid of death. In other words, these boys are not afraid of death. First of all, they're in their spiritual bodies. They know that the soul can never be burnt and the soul can never die. So they don't have any fear. But they were in this mood of being afraid of death. Really what they were afraid of was being separated from Krishna. And that mood of being afraid of being separated from Krishna is that they know how much Krishna enjoys their company, and they're afraid that if they die, then Krishna wouldn't get so much happiness anymore. They're very dependent on Krishna. And at first they ask Krishna and Balaram together, and then they just ask Krishna, implying that Krishna will save them, but Balaram will help. And certainly, although they love both Krishna and Balaram, they all have special affection for Krishna. Now, they're not thinking that Krishna is God, but they remember, oh, Garga Muni told us that Krishna will be like Narayana, who saves anyone who is dependent upon him. And you find throughout Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes that the residents of Vrindavan ask Krishna for help whenever there's some difficulty. I find it rather funny in Govardhan Lila. Krishna is only 7 years old. And when there is a flood, all of the older men and women are coming to Krishna. Krishna, please save us. So if there were a flood here, we would not go to a 7-year-old child and say, please save us from the flood. So although nobody knows that Krishna is God, still whenever there's any problem, they go to him, even when he's in the form of a little boy. Now, Krishna tells the boys to, what does he tell them to do? To close their eyes. So why did Krishna tell them to close their eyes? Now, by the way, Prabhupada says that Krishna told them to close their eyes by using his own eyes, that he didn't speak with his mouth, he spoke with his eyes. So, of course, we can all speak with our eyes, too. Okay? All of us know how to speak with our eyes. And we may ask, why does Krishna sometimes, very often in the Leelas, why does he speak with his eyes? I mean, you can say, Agyani yasya sakala indriya vrittimanti, that Krishna can do anything with any of his senses. As I said, even we can speak with our eyes to some extent. Because it's so much fun. Now, haven't you ever had a really close friend where you didn't have to say anything, you just went, and they immediately understood what you meant? Wasn't that fun? That when I was 12, in school was, as it often is, very boring. So the girls in my class had a secret code with hand signals. So we had one code for the whole class, and then I had another code just with one girl and with one girl. And I think I had 4 codes, depending on to whom I was speaking. And while the teacher's going on and on about French, we're just talking to each other with our hands, you know, secretly. And that was a lot of fun. I don't think anything we had to say was very important, but just the fact that we had a secret language was a lot of fun. So Krishna also likes to have these secret languages with his devotees. You'll find, especially in the Goswami literature, that many of the discussions Krishna has with the devotees, they'll tell us that there's 2 or 3 different meanings that Krishna is having in these discussions. So Krishna tells the boys to close their eyes, and he said that with his own eyes. Now, why did Krishna tell them to close their eyes? Well, one reason is that Krishna is about to drink the fire, and he one time got in a lot of trouble with his mother for eating dirt. And as you remember, And when Krishna was eating dirt, that the other cowherd boys in Balaram went to Madhisoda to say, Krishna's eating dirt, Krishna's eating dirt. Right? So he got in trouble with his mother. So if the boys see him eating fire, he's really going to get in trouble with his mother, so he doesn't want them to see. Another reason is that the boys love Krishna, and if they see him eating fire, they may run through the fire to try to save him, and that way they'll get hurt. Another reason that Krishna told them to close their eyes is that he was about to do a trick and bring them instantly the 15 kilometers back to Bandiravan, and he didn't want them to see how he did it. Now, the cowherd boys might have thought, why would it help the fire to close our eyes? I mean, imagine that this building was on fire, and some fireman comes in here and says, okay, everybody, close your eyes. Why does he want us to close our eyes? That's not going to do any good. I hear, of course, the fire is all surrounding them, and the cowherd boys were thinking, we know that Krishna can use jewels and mantras and herbs to do all kinds of magic. But if we can see what he's doing, then they won't work. All this magic has to be done in secret. So therefore, he wants us to close our eyes. Now, Krishna swallows up the whole fire. So, just like the Kaliya pastime, the devotees don't always like this Kaliya pastime, at least the part where Kali is holding Krishna. So many times the great devotees don't like this part of the pastime because the fire looks green, doesn't it? They don't like this part of the pastime because they don't like the idea of their beloved Krishna swallowing fire. You know, sometimes you drink milk that's too hot and you burn your throat, so remember that Brahmana who was meditating on offering Krishna sweet rice? He wanted to make sure it wasn't too hot. You ever make an offering for the deities and you're running late and you've got to put the preps on right from the pot and you're worried this might be too hot for Krishna. So the devotees, they're not so happy that Krishna's eating this fire. So Krishna's swallowing this fire. He wants to show Brahma and the other demigods that I love my devotees so much that I'm willing to swallow fire to save them. Now, we often think about what sacrifices we're doing for Krishna and Guru to spread the Hare Krishna movement, how much austerity that we go through to chant our rounds every day, to do our puja every day, to preach, just to be a devotee. As we were saying, that this pastime is about how we're attacked by the atheistic people. And if we think how much tapasya it is to be a devotee in a society of atheistic people. But how much Krishna is doing for us. And he's actually swallowing this whole fire. So that's how much love he has for his devotees. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that the reason that Krishna is swallowing the fire is that he was thirsty for fire. Now, I'm sure you know people who like chili pepper. I know one devotee whose idea of dessert is powdered chili pepper and salt. We'd all be taking prasadam, and he would carry around with him whenever he goes to prasadam a little container of chili pepper and a little container of salt. He'd sprinkle that on his plate and just eat that. I even saw one time there was cake, and he put the chili powder on top of the cake. Right? Or sometimes when I, especially if I eat at the homes of where Indians are cooking, and they say, what would you like? And I say, not too spicy. I learned to say, no chili, because you say, not too spicy, and they think, you know, five chilies in one cup of dal is not too spicy. So I personally don't like chilies, but many people, they like to eat very spicy food. If it's not spicy, they think it's not real food. So maybe some of you are like that. So Krishna, he also likes sometimes not just spicy, but real fire. You know, these people that eat a lot of chilies, they can't eat real fire. So Krishna sometimes is thirsty for real fire. But we're saying that the devotees, they don't like to think that Krishna's eating fire. So therefore, we can meditate on the idea that Yoga Maya turned this fire into a cool, lassi beverage. And some of the acharyas say that the fire, who was a demon, remember some of the acharyas say the fire was a devotee who wanted to see Krishna, and some say it was a demon. And those who say it was a demon, they say that as soon as Krishna took the fire in his hand to drink it, it got scared of Krishna and turned into lassi. Those are the different opinions of the different acharyas. Here, see another picture of Krishna swallowing the fire. Of course, in this picture, it looks like he and Balaram are outside the fire, but actually they were all in the middle of the fire. Okay. Now, the boys had become almost unconscious from the heat of the fire, and then they opened their eyes. Now, maybe they opened their eyes because Krishna said, now it's time to open your eyes. Or maybe they opened their eyes because they just thought, oh, it's not so hot anymore, let's open our eyes. Sometimes devotees think that to be Krishna conscious, you should only do things when you're exactly ordered. Do this, open your eyes, close your eyes. So it could be that they just figured out on their own that they were supposed to open their eyes. And they're thinking, maybe Krishna's a demigod. Now, when the cowherd boys see these amazing feats of Krishna, they don't become overwhelmed with awe like Arjuna did when he saw the universal form. When Arjuna saw the universal form, he said, oh, how can I say that I'm your friend? Right? You're so great. I've offended you by thinking that I'm your friend. So the cowherd boys don't think like that. When they see Krishna's opulence and power, they keep their mood of being Krishna's friend. So they thought, oh, Krishna's our friend. And maybe he's a demigod. Here they are talking with each other and rejoicing. And then they said, well, if Krishna's a demigod, maybe we are demigods too, because we are Krishna's friends. So thinking like this, they were in great ecstasy. Then Krishna started playing his flute in a very specific, from another one of our books, Krishna started playing his flute in a very special way and returned to Vrindavan at the end of the day. And at this point in the Bhagavatam, it says how the gopis, they're thinking that when Krishna's gone in the forest all day, that one moment is just like 12 years of separation from him. And they can't bear the thought. Of course, if they knew that he was swallowing fire, they'd be even more upset. But they can't stand the thought of Krishna being away from them. And Krishna relieved the Mahabhav separation of the gopis. And then all the cowherd boys, this is from another one of our books, all the cowherd boys go to Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and say, guess what? Guess what Krishna did today? Krishna saved us from the forest fire. And then the affection of all of the residents of Vrindavan increase, and then the rainy season begins. So this was a little shorter story, so it's just an hour today. If there's any questions or comments on this story or on any of the stories? Yes. I don't know if Krishna also drinks goat milk from buffalo milk, but they certainly herd goats and buffalo. It's specifically mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Cows, goats, and buffaloes. I know you can make cheese from goat's milk. That's very nice. Have you ever had goat's milk cheese? Very nice. Well, Prabhupada said if you can't get milk from cows, next best is goats. I know Prabhupada didn't like buffalo milk. Anyway, not that whatever Krishna does, we can all do also. Just like the cowherd boys in Krishna's pastimes are transcendental, so are the animals. I mean, Krishna also has, like, you know, pet deer and pet monkeys, but I wouldn't advise that you keep a pet monkey. Yes?
Also about the children who are growing in women, so not to fall in the same situation as your son, who had to watch like at 25, he had to
Well, I'd rather he watch at 25 than at 5. That's actually, we'll be discussing this in Italy, if any of you are going to the academic conference in Italy in mid-July. This will be the topic of my presentation there, as to the relationship between spirituality and culture, and how you maintain a spiritual organization when dealing with alien cultures. So that's a very long discussion. And we'll look there at three ways of dealing with alien cultures. One way is to be exclusive and to ignore the alien culture. Just create your own little fort, which you can't do entirely if you're a preaching movement. You know, if you're a preaching movement, you have to contact the alien culture. Another way is to try to just merge with the alien culture. And another way is to try to have a dialogue with the alien culture, where you give some things to the alien culture and you take some things from the alien culture. So all three positions can be supported with different quotes from Prabhupada, depending on which quote you want to look at, and different actions of Srila Prabhupada. And each behavior has its good things and its bad things. So I think it's very difficult to say everybody should do this. There was a time that I would have said everybody should do this, but I'm not going to say that anymore because I don't believe it anymore. So what I'd rather say is you should study the three ways of dealing with materialistic cultures. You should understand the benefits of each way and the costs of each way, and then as you as an individual decide which benefits and costs you are willing to live with. And I'm sorry if that's the best answer that I can give. That's a whole other, you know, two-hour presentation if I get into that. But I just simply wanted to make the point that dealing with the materialistic culture is certainly more difficult for our children than for us. You're making the point that we only see the adversity as a blessing at the end. If we go back to this quote of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is again from Jivadharma. He says, the tribulations of the jiva while trying to satisfy the Lord in his pastimes are by all accounts pleasurable. Yet the conditioned soul, by misuse of his free will, denies himself the exaltation one experiences whilst directly assisting Sri Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. So I'm saying that our distress, it's not so much of seeing, okay, this distress I've gone through 5 years from now, 15 years from now, I see how it's a blessing. But it's, we would like to see it as a blessing now, right? We'd like to have that exaltation, the exaltation one experiences. Now, one way you can do this, I'm suggesting, in line with what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here, is seeing our life as part of Krishna's pastimes. That what I'm doing is part of Krishna's story. Not that it's my story, it's his story. And if we choose to see it that way, then even right now, while you're going through the suffering, you can also find it as exaltation rather than as suffering. and try an experiment next time there's some difficulty. And probably none of us will have to wait terribly long to practice this. If you think, I'm part of Krishna's adventure, how is Krishna going to save me from this situation? What's Krishna going to do with this situation? Don't try to make it so, don't keep on the platform of logic. Come to the platform of feeling. Yeah, go from here to here. That's my suggestion. So just like right now, all over the world, there are many people watching adventure movies or reading adventure books. Did you ever read any book like that? Watch any movie like that? So, I mean, I remember watching Superman shows. So you know that Superman is going to win, right? That's for sure. There's no question. Superman's going to win. So why are you watching the show? To see how he wins. And it's so exciting. And I don't remember all the details anymore. It was a long time ago. But, you know, I do remember that these heroes, they get captured by the bad guys. Right? Even the hero gets captured by the bad guy sometimes. What to speak of the people who are helping the hero and the hero's friends. What was her name? Lois Lane. She would get captured, and sometimes Superman would even get captured. But that's what makes it fun. If nobody ever gets in trouble, there's no fun. Who would watch a movie like that? They wouldn't sell any tickets. And people are enjoying. Right? We're enjoying. Even though you know Superman's going to win, James Bond, whoever these people are now, you know they're going to win. There's no question. Otherwise, they can't make another movie about the same person, so for sure. Right? But still, we're enjoying. And the difficulty is part of the enjoyment. Otherwise, there's no enjoyment. So we know also, Krishna's going to win. And we're part of his story, preaching Krishna consciousness. Hey, why do people join the military? I've never really understood why people join the military. It never made any sense to me. But they're thinking, this is my pleasure to do this for my country. Of course, now the wars they fight, they often can't figure out why they're fighting these wars. But if you're fighting a war against a real demon, you know, that's pleasurable. Even if you're having to slog through the mud, you know, when the Allies landed in Normandy, I used to teach history in the Gurukul, you know? So the Allies land in Normandy, and you get out of the boats. You don't have your bathing costume on, you know? You have this big pack on your back, and you have boots, and you're walking through the water, and the water's getting in your boots. You know, physically, it's miserable, and you're being shot at by the Nazis. I'm doing this for freedom and peace in the world. Right? That's why they do it. And even their tour of duty is over and they sign up again. You met any military people like this? I have. Yeah. Were you one of them? And you sign up again. Why? I mean, even in just everyday life, when there's no, you know, bad guy going to blow up the universe and Superman saves him, or there's no big war going on, Just everyday life, making sacrifices for people you love is very pleasurable. So that depends on how we choose to interpret reality. Do I interpret reality that life is all about me and what I'm going through, and I'm this body, and this is happening to this body, and this is happening to this, to our mind, and all of our little stories are about me, and I talk to my friends about all of my stories, and I write in my diary about my stories, and what's going on in my mind is my stories? Or is it really Krishna's story? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here, this is our choice. And when we're suffering, you should understand, is because I am interpreting what's going on in a way that's false. Right? Instead, he embraces Maya. Maya means that which is not. I am not this body. What I'm going through this life is not my story. It's not about me at all. Those things are illusion. So if I embrace that illusion, then I suffer. And if I embrace the reality, then I'm feeling exaltation at every moment, whether it's something materially wonderful happening or something materially horrible happening. So that's, it's not something just by analysis, but it's a decision made in the heart. And you can say, I think you said, well, we can do that sometimes. Okay. Then at least you know it's possible. Maybe you can say, I can't do that 100% of the time. I can do it sometimes. All right. When you do it those sometimes, and you feel exaltation, even in a situation that someone else would say is miserable, you can say, oh, now I see that it's possible. Now I see that it's possible. If you want to get a little bit more into analysis, Maya means especially being covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. That because I have desires to enjoy separately from Krishna, which those desires are impossible to fulfill, all enjoyment comes from Krishna, rasa mahalapsukanteya, all rasa, all enjoyment comes from Krishna. If I think I'm going to get rasa that's not Krishna, I must be an illusion. There's no way. It doesn't exist. So if I want something that doesn't exist, I have to be covered by passion and ignorance. And if I'm covered by passion and ignorance, I will experience suffering. And artha nivritti is to remove this covering of passion and ignorance and be in sattva, to be in truth. And until I have nasta prayeshu bhavreshu ruchin bhagavata senaya bhagavata itvasoke bhakti bhavati naishiki, until I have mostly, not even 100%, Prabhupada says 50%. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also is giving about 40-50%. If I just half remove this covering and passion and ignorance, which I can only do when I give up the desire to be in passion and ignorance, all my material desires are like saying, I want to be in passion and ignorance. All material desires, that's what they come to in their essence. I want to be an illusion. I want to be in falsity. So when that's half cleared away, then Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, then one feels always exalted. Even when there are apparent difficulties, and the difficulties become, just like Sri Krishna Swami was saying in Klesha Agni discussion, all our difficulties come from attachment and misidentification. I mean, I don't worry about your finances and your children and your sick mother and your car that's breaking down. It's not causing me pain. Even if I have a good friend, if they're injured or they're sick, I don't feel pain. It's interesting. So why do I feel pain at something I'm attached to? It's just my attachment. That's my wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna. Otherwise, it's just interesting. Oh, how Krishna's energy works. That when you break your finger, the brain thinks that it's painful. So even if you can only experience that one out of every 20 times, at least you know it's real, and that eventually that will become one's constant consciousness. I don't know if that helps at all. Not much. You'll think about it. Ask Krishna to at least show you that it's true. Even one or two experiences, just so you can see that it's true. Even a materialistic person, Prabhupada says, in the teachings of Lord Kapila, can put his mind in such a way that if he's having surgery, he will not feel pain. Hmm?
There was also Fight Club.
I'm sorry?
There was one movie, Fight Club. I don't know.
I never heard of it. But it was like that? They could detach their mind? I met one medical doctor who was allergic to anesthesia and needed an operation. So she learned hypnosis. I met her personally. And she went through the operation with no anesthesia, and she showed me the newspaper articles. So she's just an ordinary person. She became interested in spiritual things after that experience. But Stalin did that, and he wasn't even a nice materialistic person, what to speak of a spiritual person. So even a materialistic person, even an evil person, if they remove that attachment, they don't feel pain as pain. They just feel pain as interesting. I teach this to devotees for childbirth. I just met one lady also who had, when she had her baby, she said it wasn't painful. I did this and it wasn't painful. So they're just mechanically, temporarily detaching their mind. If you genuinely detach your mind, then there's no pain. Of course, if you want to enjoy the pleasure of the body, then you won't detach your mind. Now will you? That's the problem. Yes?
What is it like about other feelings, for example, compassion? You see the Shlokha would want to be a warm person and also cry.
Well, what about feelings like Prabhupada exhibiting compassion? The Sanskrit word for emotion. Any of you know the Sanskrit word for emotion? Bhava. Bhava also means existence. Saratam bhava bhavita. Whatever you think about at the time of death, that's what you'll attain. Or we call the bhutas, like the ghosts, the entities. Bhava just means is. So our philosophy is that the ultimate expression of existence is emotion. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. We would say, no, I feel and desire, therefore I am. So our material emotions are reflections of our spiritual emotions. We're not interested simply in detachment from Maya. Now you can become detached from Maya just through learning hypnosis, but you can't maintain it. We're interested in becoming attached to Krishna, and then our real spiritual, that's attachment. Jiva Goswami's book, Madhava Mahotsava, which is about the coronation of Radharani as the queen of Vrindavan. So at the end of the coronation ceremony, Radharani gives a benediction to everyone present. She said, let all those who are bound become liberated. So her friends feel a lot of distress because they're bound to Radharani with love and they don't want to be liberated. So the emotions we feel in this world, the emotions we consider positive, like love and compassion, and the emotions we consider negative, like fear and anger and envy, all of those are just dim reflections of our actual spiritual emotions. So when we talk about detachment, we're not talking about detachment from being a living being. We're not talking about becoming a stone. You can become detached in that way very temporarily. But we're talking about you're detached from the material because you have the spiritual. You cannot compare the compassion of a liberated soul to what we talk about as compassion from a material point of view. There's no comparison. Yes. They say to Krishna, that's one of their arguments they give to Krishna. They say, Krishna, we're your intimate friends. We shouldn't be suffering in this way. You find the gopis often talk to Krishna like that too. They say, we're not your ordinary devotees. You shouldn't be putting us through that. Yes? So? So I like this question, because we're often taught that whatever comes to us, we should never go to Krishna and ask him anything. Just whatever comes, we just take it. And yet we find that the highest devotees in Vrindavan, they do go to Krishna and ask to be saved. In fact, they do that over and over and over again. They even complain to Krishna. And they say, hey, you're not supposed to make us suffer like this. We're your intimate friends. What are you doing here? So, actually, in the Anyabhagasika Sunyam verse of Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comment that this Anyabhagasika means anything that's like a material desire. And they say that even in this world, if, you know, some car is coming at us about to kill us, if we say, Krishna, save us, that's not a material desire. So that's there. And the other side is that these great devotees, when they're asking Krishna to save them, that's part of the relationship. That Krishna wants to play the hero. You know, if they just sat there and said, okay, Krishna, you can save us, you cannot save us, we don't really care. If we get burned in the fire, it doesn't matter. That's not very enlivening for the hero. You know, if you want to be a hero, right, and the person that you're going to save just says, you know, I really don't care if you save me or not. That's not very exciting. Of course, Krishna even comes in such circumstances. Prahlad Maharaj wasn't asked to be saved. Maharaj Amarish wasn't asking to be saved. But we find the very intimate devotees in Vrindavan, they do ask to be saved. They're appreciating that Krishna likes to play the hero. So Krishna will play the hero even if the devotees don't ask. But they're thinking about Krishna's pleasure. They're thinking Krishna likes to play the hero. So come on, Krishna, come save us already. You know, we're your intimate friends. You're supposed to save us. You know, you're not supposed to come on. So they enjoy saving them. And they enjoy being rescued. Anyway, if you ask Krishna to save you, that's okay. Better to ask Krishna to save you than to think you're going to be saved by your health insurance. You can use your health insurance, but if you think your health insurance or your intelligence or your friends or your shelter, that's not very good. So if you want to ask for help, ask for it from Krishna. But even the devotees are asking for help. They're willing to do whatever Krishna wants. You know, if Krishna wants them to die in the battle like Abhimanyu or Gatokacha, that's okay too. I mean, some places where Radharani is saying, you know, Krishna's left Vrindavan, I should just die. And she says, but if I die and Krishna comes back, he won't be happy. Balaram was saying this to Krishna when he was in Kaliya. He said, Krishna, if you stay in Kaliya anymore, all your devotees will die, and then your own tender heart will be full of grief. You'll suffer. Is that okay? That's natural. If there's some train coming at you, say, Krishna, help! That's fine. Don't worry about it. And if you can stand there like Maharaj Ambarish and just, okay, Durvasa Muni wants to kill me or not, that's also fine. Mari Krishna Rakhi K, Rakhi Krishna Mari K. That's also fine. When in Prabhupada's last days, he told us, he said, it's your duty to pray to Krishna to save me, but whatever Krishna wants. Anything else? Yes? Yes.
When you're stuck like with our scars and goals, it's we are stuck in the body and Krishna is helping us stuck here. And these stories are inspiration for our lives, our life, to be more happy in trouble. This is very difficult. This is not to be happy in our trouble when you are in like with our scars. But do you see that Krishna
didn't
save us?
He doesn't save us?
He saved us.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, our voice to Prabhupada.